Blog Talk Radio.
Cleanup Hitters program coming to you here on September 8th. Holy smokes, folks. There's just, I mean, you know, we're counting them down. About 25 games, thereabouts, remaining in the Major League Baseball season. So, look, if it all hasn't hit you yet, I mean, you know, look, Labor Day just passed as yesterday. We turned the calendar on September 8 days ago. If it hasn't hit you yet, well, it's staring you square in the eyes right now. The summer is drifting away. And for many of us, that is a very, very melancholy sort of thing. I mean, I am so looking forward to getting football underway this week. And yet at the same time, I must be honest, seeing baseball and the summer months disappear before our very eyes. Always very, very difficult. Always. Doesn't matter how old you get. It's always a difficult thing. But here we are, September 8th, nonetheless, 3 weeks thereabouts remaining in the Major League Baseball season. We're coming to you here on our 26th episode of this particular program. That's hard to believe as well that we've been on the air for half a year already with just this program. So what are we going to get into here this evening as we start to wind this thing down? Well, you know, look, I wish there was a lot of intrigue, and there kind of is, but most of that intrigue now rests in the hands of some of the usual suspects, those ones that we've kind of been talking about, oh, it feels like for weeks and weeks and weeks now. And so it's difficult to get away from the conversations around teams like the New York Yankees and the Toronto Blue Jays and the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Chicago Cubs and, well, the Texas Rangers and, well, what happened to the Los Angeles Angels? What happened to the Baltimore Orioles, who are now sitting there in fourth place in the AL East themselves? We're going to get into a little bit of all of that. We're going to get into a little bit of a controversy going on up there in Gotham City. Yeah, Matt Harvey, huh? What's this? Yeah, the Mets are riding high, but we've got a little bit of an issue going on around Matt Harvey, of all people. This one's got the you could make the case that this has got a Strasburg sort of smell to it. We're going to get into that one early here in the program this evening. We're going to talk about no-hitters. Hey, we're going to talk about shorter games. We might even get into a little bit of chat about, or I don't know, should we? One Curt Schilling? Well, maybe we will. We'll see how the time goes. Here's what we need from all of you out there that are listening. We need you to call in. We need you to participate. We need you to jump in with us here because we only have a handful of these left. Well, only a handful in the regular season, and then we'll be going through the playoffs, and before you know it, this program will be a wrap for the season altogether. We need you to get involved. 347-826-9964. That's how you can jump in with us. Pick up a phone, any phone, the nearest phone. Pick up somebody's phone. Who cares? You don't even know who the person's phone is? You got to call us. Pick up the phone and just call us, 347-826-9964. You probably have something on your mind with regard to the Major League Baseball season. Otherwise, if you're listening on a computer, hey, hit that Skype button. It'll put you up right through to us loud and clear. We'd love to put you on that way. Or you can jump in the chat room, leave us a message there, or hit me up over on Twitter. Shortly, I will be putting up our Major League Baseball Frat House Sports Twitter poll question here in a moment. Let me get Caleb in here. Caleb, how are you, buddy? How's everything going?
I'm doing good. I'm doing real good. How are you doing?
Real good. Real good. I guess the last time you and I spoke was Friday night on the fantasy program.
Yep.
We're here tonight, though, to talk baseball. How are things? Are you as hot down there today? We're on a three-day. We got a three-day heat wave going on up here in the Philadelphia region.
It's been pretty warm. It's been pretty hot, actually. This afternoon wasn't too bad. It was about 88, I think, which is a milder day for us, which has been kind of nice. It was still hot, but it's been pretty hot over the weekend here. It was hot, but it's supposed to rain over the next couple of days, and then after that, it looks like it's going to pretty much cool off, which I'm looking forward to that. More of a fall type of a weather, which will be great. But,
Sixth heat wave of the summer up here, as we're expected to hit into the 90s again yet tomorrow. So it was a bit hot up here today and yesterday for sure. Nick will be joining us in here. Nick with a C. That's how we're going to call Nick. Nick with a C, as opposed to our Nick with a K. but Nick will be joining us in here shortly. He had indicated that he could be a couple of minutes late. So when we see Nick jump in, we'll get him on the line with us. What do you say? How we doing? We got the sports machine ready to rock and roll there, Caleb?
Oh, you know it.
All right, well, let's do it.
Tonight, through the use of the sports machine.
It's all
yep,
yours.
So we got the Mets in Washington to finish out that series tonight and tomorrow, which is going to be interesting because we're going to get into, the whole Harvey situation there. But then after that, we got the Baltimore Orioles in the Bronx, Atlanta in Philadelphia there, Tampa Bay in Detroit, Toronto in Boston. The Pirates are in Cincinnati. Milwaukee is in Miami. And those are the early games. And then for the later games, 1 second. We have the Brewers and the Marlins to wrap up the early games. And then after that, we have the Indians and the White Sox, the Twins in Kansas City, and a big matchup, the Cubs in St. Louis. That's a huge one. San Fran in Arizona. The Dodgers taking on the Angels. The Astros against the Athletics. The Rangers taking on the Mariners. And to wrap it all up, the Rockies in San Diego to take on the Padres. And that wraps it up for tonight.
Yeah, and it's interesting because as I pointed out entering into the program here, it would be great if there was a lot of suspense. We've got our share of suspense going on in Major League Baseball, but I wouldn't say it's a lot of suspense. There's a handful of things that are going on in around a couple of different teams. You got the two teams fighting up there in the AL East. You got the three going on in the NL Central. You got the Texas Rangers in the mix. When you look down at the schedule this evening, most of these probably would favor the favorites. that's the best way I can think of it.
Yeah. There's not really a matchup that is a playoff implication matchup other than really the Cubs and Cardinals that I can think of that is going to really affect multiple teams. I guess one could argue about the Mets and the Nationals, but the Nationals are done. I'm sorry, but they're done. They're not going to make a comeback here. Now, I could be totally wrong, and they could just destroy, but I doubt that. But yeah, there's really, I mean, you kind of look at all of these games, and you're like, all right, there's a bunch of mediocre teams playing a bunch of mediocre teams. And the actual playoff teams, they're playing a bunch of lower-ranked mid-level teams. So, you know, there's not really that good playoff matchup until really the third week in September is when all of the matchups really start to happen.
Absolutely. And that's, you can bet, you know, come that time, then things are really going to start to get, then the chatter over here will get quite interesting, trust me. But I'm looking at the schedule, and, you know, this is a time of year when you expect to see a lot of those interdivision type of matchups, and you are seeing them. It's just that the teams that are playing against, as in the case of the Orioles and the Yankees, the Orioles are out of it. And
they're done.
Real quick, let's just go over to those useless power rankings for a moment, because I'm looking at them today from USA Today, and I got to tell you right now, I mean, boy, I didn't expect to see this one. This was a shocker, Caleb. The Braves are ranked 30th. The Braves are.
I can
see
that.
They're below the Phils. They're below the Phils in power ranking. There were some of us, I think myself included, who had the Braves potentially the second team in the NL East. I'm looking forward to doing that show. We'll do that one. We'll have to do that one right before the season ends. I'll go back and I'll pull everybody's predictions from back in the beginning of the season, and we'll revisit those. But I think I, for one, had the Braves potentially coming in second in the NL East, and right now they're power ranked below the Philadelphia Phils. That just blew me away. Absolutely blew me away.
I guess I could see that, but I do think, though, that, I mean, the Phillies have actually, they've actually played pretty decent. The Braves have gotten absolutely destroyed. I mean, they lost about a week and a half ago, 20-1 or whatever against the Yankees, and they scored, you know, more on them in their third and final game of that series. I mean, and then they got blown out by whoever was up next. I can't even remember, but they've just gotten blown out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Phillies, they've actually had some offense. I mean, they've actually looked pretty good. So I think that that kind of all goes into the whole thing. But, you know, once you're at the bottom half, I mean, it doesn't really matter because you're not going to make the postseason, you know. So, but it is an interesting thing, though. Yeah, they fell five spots. That is kind of shocking.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised by that. You know, one of the ones that we talked about last week here a little bit, that has just, I mean, I just don't know what to make of it or what to make of them going back to that one matchup tonight that we've got with Baltimore there in New York. What in the world? Talk about letting the air out of the balloon, like, really fast. That's what happened to Baltimore. 3 weeks ago, we're talking about them potentially contending and fighting for the NL or the AL East, and all of a sudden they're in fourth place right now behind Tampa Bay. I don't know what to make of them. I don't know what to make of them. You bring up one interesting, and I'll let you chat on that one for a second here, and then I'm gonna get Nick in here. The Angels, you had brought the Angels up in our pre-show conversation. Another one. The Angels remind me, I guess maybe not quite as bad, remind me a little bit of the Orioles. In the same
Yeah,
respect.
They do. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's insane. I mean, you know, the Angels, they were a preseason favorite. Much like that of the Washington Nationals, and we've seen how that's worked out for them. I mean, right now the Angels are sitting 5.5 out of first, which we all thought that the Angels would easily run away with that division. And it's been anything but that. And they're 3.5 out of the wild card here. And so, I mean, I'm just as shocked as anyone that they've dropped as much as they have. And honestly, the biggest thing is that Houston has just come out of nowhere, and they've really been a dominant force. And so that's got something, obviously, to really do with that. But, you know, I mean, the Angels, I really did think that they were going to be a force coming out of the AL West, and they were going to have a shot to win the pennant. And I really did, between them and the Royals. I mean, those were the two teams that I had out of the AL, I mean, that I thought were going to try to contend for a World Series. And, well, I mean, the Royals, obviously, they look really good. But, man, the Angels have just fallen. And it's just been a mixture of everything. You know, the pitching, the offense kind of hits sometimes, but sometimes just doesn't show up at all. You know, there's been a lot of things rolling around that, you know, the players don't really respond as much as they used to Mike Socha, because he's, you know, been there for, what, 12 years or so. I mean, he's been there for a while. And so, you know, I've heard a lot of that, in that, I mean, all of the players just didn't really respond to him. And, you know, that's a big issue. And so, you know, Socha is the longest tenured manager right now. And that, I mean, I do think that that has something to partially, you know, do with their lack of success. But it's also a major thing that, man, the offense just hasn't showed up, and they've had the pieces. They have everything ready to go. I mean, you've got Mike Trout and Albert Pujols. Now, I realize that, you know, it can't be just a two-man show, that, you know, you have to have other production, which they've seemed to have it at certain points in the season, but they just can never collectively bring it all in and make it a successful roster. And so the pitching, I think, has been one of the even bigger thing. I mean, they've just not shown up. When they entering into this year, they were said to have a fantastic pitching rotation. They were looked at as one of the deeper bullpens, you know, that they looked to be ready, and they've just fallen apart, and I just don't know what's happened with them. I mean, so we're going to have to see. They're only 3.5 out of the wild card, so maybe they can pull something together, because they're going to, you know, have their division rivals here coming up in the final 25 games or so of the regular season. So maybe they can win a couple of series against Houston, maybe Texas, and make a run, and hopefully, and maybe get to a playoff spot. But the chances of that happening are very slim.
Well, let's do this. Let's get Nick in, and let's get Nick's thought on the Angels for a moment, because, of course, they're sitting just above his favorite team in the entire whole wide world, and that's the Seattle Mariners, and perhaps maybe he might have a little bit of an insight on that. Nick, what do you think about these Angels and their fall from their fall from grace, huh?
Pardon my pun. It happened fast. I mean, for them to not hold on to their division, that's one thing. You can't really blame them for that. They're playing in a tough division, especially with Houston. And Texas has looked good, and I've said about Texas before, the addition of Cole Hamels, I think, at the deadline, the main motive was next year, and they accidentally got a whole lot of benefit, whether it be directly or indirectly, since that period of time. They've benefited incredibly and jumped up into the wild card. They're not too far out. The thing that shocks me is they're right around 500. It's not like they're just behind the Astros. I mean, they're 5.5 behind the Astros. And then we talk about, 3.5 out of the wild card?
Yep.
They're behind two teams in the wild, the second wild card spot. So not only are they chasing the, who would it be, the Yankees, I guess, are the second wild card, or are they the first?
Yankees are the first, and then the you've first. Got Texas, and you got Minnesota. I'm going to bring up Minnesota in a moment here. Go ahead.
Right, so you're chasing not only Texas, but you're also chasing Minnesota, in that even if you make up whatever they need, 2.5 games on Texas, and the Twins do the same thing, they're still not quite in the playoffs. Now, I think there's a very good chance that Los Angeles does get into the playoffs. I obviously would not guarantee it, and I think it's I wouldn't even say it's more likely than not, but
yeah,
they're very far from eliminated, especially when you consider I think I heard, and I might be wrong, but I think I heard Mike Trout hit his first home run the other day in a month. So if
yep.
he can start to heat back up, if the offense gets things together, if the pitching comes through, I don't think Minnesota is a better team than Los Angeles. I don't think Texas is a better team than Los Angeles. And I know that's not always the case that the better team wins out. But there's a month left in the season. They're not too far back. If they can get everything together, if they can get their team together, there's a very good chance this team is right back in the playoffs. I think they're far, far from eliminated. And while I think they have to play cautiously and move forward cautiously, I don't think there's any real reason to worry just yet if I'm the Angels.
The Angels right now are 4-6 in their last 10. They're right now in a three-game series at home against the Dodgers. All right, no slouch there. That's followed by a three-game series at home. They'll play at home against the Astros. Oh, boy. This isn't getting any better, guys. That'll be followed. They go to Seattle for 3. They go to Minnesota for 4. And then they go immediately to Houston again for 3 more. So they're going to go out on the road for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 10 games. This is not an easy schedule for the Angels. I almost am inclined to believe, and I'm Caleb, I'm getting the sense that you might be with me on this one. I'm not sure that it's too early to start tolling the death knell for the Angels. I'm going to be honest with you. I took a look at Minnesota's schedule. I like Minnesota's schedule a whole heck of a lot better because they're going to be playing a lot more teams in the Central Division, which is a lot weaker. Minnesota, I think, has a much better shot at potentially getting that second spot away from Texas over the Angels. That's my personal opinion. I don't know. Caleb, what do you think?
Yeah. I'm with you on that one. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, the Angels, it's going to be really tough for them. You know, now the Twins, I don't think that they're a better roster necessarily than the Angels, but they're playing much better as a team. And like you said, they've got the easier schedule. And the Angels, I think that they could pull this out, but that many games on the road, I just don't really. I think it's a little bit too late for them to get hot.
Yeah, I mean, now they do close the season with the Mariners at home, and they close this, and then their final series is with the Oakland A's at home as well. So, all right, they get a little bit of a break there, but what they're dealing with right now at home and then the next 10 on the road thereafter, oh boy, I think potentially 2 weeks from now we might be saying, yeah, they're definitely out of here. They're definitely out of here.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. What Nick, schedule doesn't look good to me. I don't know. What do you think?
It's definitely something to consider. I mean, again, like I said, I wouldn't say it's more likely than not the Angels are in the playoffs. I just – knowing how good this team can be, and what do we've got? We've got 25-ish games left in the season-ish.
Yep.
And they're within 3.5 games, about that, of the second wild card. Again, it's absolutely an uphill battle, but there's no reason for the Angels to walk into the clubhouse and say, uh-oh, you know, we need a miracle. It's absolutely possible. Is it probable? That's another discussion, and while I'm not going to take one side or the other in that, but I think it's very much possible. And when you look at, regardless of the schedule, regardless of who they're playing, regardless of what the rest of the rosters look like, when you look at the star power on the Angels as opposed to the Twins and the Rangers, while this isn't, you know, this isn't a definitive, tangible thing to take into account, you almost want to place some faith into guys like Pujols, into guys like Trout,
sure.
who are going to get their teams ready to go, riled up, understand the situation, understand what they have to do day in, day out for the last month. And when you take into account those intangibles, I think a 3.5-game deficit of the second wild card spot for the Angels behind the two teams we've mentioned with almost a month left in the season is, like I said, it's whether it's probable or not is another discussion. It's an uphill battle, but it's absolutely possible. And from a biased perspective, I would love to see the Angels in the playoffs because I think it would be fantastic to see Trout on the big stage, Pujols on the big stage, as opposed to these guys in Minnesota, guys in Texas. I think it would be much more entertaining to watch Trout in a 7-game series and then a 7-game series. I think it makes for better storylines when you have the potential, and this will be improbable, but the potential for Pujols to return to St. Louis for the first time since leaving in a World Series matchup, maybe. I mean, all of this is way down the road, and it's slim pickings, but there's too much, if the Angels make the playoffs, that I get excited about to not be rooting for them.
I hear what you're saying, and I concur with you. I'm not saying that it's completely impossible. It's a funny thing. You and I look at it completely the opposite. I look at it and go, you want to know something? I'd rather see a team like Minnesota in there. They've got my imagination captured a bit, not dissimilarly to the way that Kansas City did last year, Houston has this year. I say, go Minnesota. God bless you. You've turned it around. Look at you. 5-18 a ball, 71-66, and they're in the playoff conversation. I think it's awesome what Minnesota has done this year. Absolutely awesome. And so, therefore, I'm rooting for Minnesota I'd like to see them. Oh, I certainly like to see them sneak out over the Texas Rangers. I don't think in a one game against either Toronto or the Yankees they're going to come out anywhere in. I don't think that nobody's favoring Minnesota in that sort of a matchup. Before we jump over to a New York hot topic, let me get a New York guy in here, and that's our buddy Richard from New York. Richard, how you doing tonight, buddy?
Fine. How are you?
Real good. Real good. We're talking a little bit of the speculation here on what's happening in the playoffs as we come down to 25 games left. Any thoughts?
I think they're going to be really exciting the last 3 weeks of the season. Definitely.
What are you keeping your eye on, aside from the Cubs? Aside from the Cubs.
Well, I'm following the Cubs. I'm actually following the Yankees and the Blue Jays. That's going to be quite a race to decide who wins the AL East. I think the Yankees have a pretty good shot to make the wild card. I think they're in first. They had the first wild card position pretty well wrapped up, or they're leading in that position, but they're like nose to nose for the division.
Yep.
And they play each other. I think at Yankee Stadium, I think 3 or 4 games in the next couple of days, and they also play each other in Toronto later in the month. So that's. You know, there's a lot to be determined about those two teams.
Good conversation there, too. I wanted to bring that one up. And, in fact, Toronto will be in New York for a 4-game set starting on Thursday night. So Thursday right through next Sunday. So we got a 4-gamer there, guys. Toronto in New York.
That's
the
a big
Yankees,
series.
You're not kidding. And it's a 4-game series, too. That makes it all the more important. There will only be one more time that the Yankees and Toronto will meet, and that'll be the 21st to the 23rd of September, where the Yankees will go to Toronto. That's a 3-gamer, however. This is very, very compelling. Now, again, when you look around, when you take a look at it, when you take a look right now, I'm looking at Toronto's schedule. I got Toronto's schedule up in front of me because I frankly think Toronto is going to win the AL East. That's my gut feeling on it. When you look at Toronto's schedule, they're going to have to go on the road for a 3-game set next week against the Atlanta Braves. Forget that one. That one doesn't make any difference at all. That's not even going to have That's not even going to matter. They're going to have three games at home against the Red Sox, three games at home then against the Yankees, three games at home against the Tampa Bay Rays. The Rays not playing badly. And then they're going to close out the season down in Baltimore at the Orioles. Let me get Nick in here. Nick, this is the best race going right now in Major League Baseball. The Toronto Blue Jays and the Yankees, the best race going. Who would you give the edge to right now at this point?
The Blue Jays. I think they're a scary team. I think the Yankees have looked real good lately, though. Both teams have looked real good lately. But if you look at the Yankees' last 10, just from a pure numbers standpoint, they've won 8 of them. I really, really, really like the Blue Jays. I think the Yankees are a good team. I look at the Blue Jays, I think they can be a scary team. If they're on, if they can turn it on, I think they can be a really, really scary team to face up against, whether it's the middle of September or the end of October. I love the way the Blue Jays have been playing from top to bottom in their lineup. There's not a hitter you don't have to worry about. The pitching has finally come together here in the second half of the season. I think they are a very threatening baseball team right now, and I think it's tight, and I think it'll be a great race down to the end of things. I think it'd be the Blue Jays' division to lose. I think if the Yankees win the division, they're going to take it away from the Blue Jays.
I agree. I believe that it's the Toronto Blue Jays' division to lose is exactly the way to phrase it. Caleb, you heard Nick right there. He said that they're a very, very, very scary team to play right now. Anybody want to make an assessment? And I don't want to jump the gun here, but Toronto against St. Louis? Who's coming out on that one?
The Cardinals.
I might almost say Toronto.
I would not.
Okay.
The pitching staff is horrible. I mean, yeah, you've got one guy, David Price, for like a wild card game. You know, that's about all he's going to be good for, because you can't win a series with one pitcher. You can't. You have to have some pitching from somewhere. I mean, you look at the rest of their rotation, and they're awful. Like, they are horrible. Sometimes they can be really good, but usually they're horrible and they're getting killed, but they get wins because their offense is so ridiculous. And so if, you know, the Blue Jays show up and they face a really good pitching staff like the Pirates, like the Cardinals, I don't know that, you know, their offense is going to be as potent, because they have to hit really good pitchers. And so that's why I still think, no matter how many great bats that you have to have some pitching, because that's how you win championships. It just is. And so, yeah, the Blue Jays, they could outscore people, maybe in the AL, but when they play in an NL stadium, they're down one bat because that pitcher has to hit. Now, I realize that the AL has home field, but it's going to be hard for the Blue Jays to win on the road because, one, they're already not that great of a road franchise anyway, and second, they're going to be down a bat, and they have to use a pitcher to hit. So I just don't think that they have the pitching to beat anybody other than for one game, you know, in a seven-game series, maybe two games, depending if it even goes to a game seven, possibly a third game that Price could potentially go. But, I mean, I just don't think that they could really contend with, you know, the Cardinals, maybe the Pirates, that have really good pitching. I just don't.
I have a sneaky suspicion Nick's going to agree with you.
I'm not, actually. I get to the fact that Mark Burley's got a 3 ERA since the beginning of June. R.A. Dickey's is 3.18, and Marco Estrada's is 3.18 all year. It's not fantastic. It's not what the Cardinals' pitching staff is like. It's not what the Mets' pitching staff is like. But I would go in the complete opposite direction if you're going to so much as call it horrible. It's again, when you get to the playoffs, all these teams, we've mentioned this on previous shows, all of these teams have really, really great pitching rotations, and a lot of these matchups are going to come down to what sets you apart. You know, I've got a great 1-2 punch. Yeah, the Dodgers have a great 1-2 punch. They go up against the Mets, and they go, yeah, well, so do we. You know, what else do you have? What can you beat us with? I think the Blue Jays pitching staff, because the rest of the staffs are so great for the most part, it looks weak. And I agree with you. It looks weak in terms of relativity to the rest of the teams. But David Price is about as good as it gets as an ace.
No doubt. No doubt.
Mark Burley have pitched very, very well since the beginning of June. And I think that the thing that sets them apart, the thing I was just mentioning, is their ability to score at will. Every time I turn them on TV, every time they're on national television, I flip on in the middle of the game, they got four runs, I go make a sandwich, I come back, they got 11. Then they got 17, you know? I'm not expecting them to put up 17 runs against Kershaw and then 16 against Greinke, but I think their pitching staff is good enough to hold their own. And I think it's not fair to say that Burley and Estrada and Dickey and the rest of the staff behind Price isn't good enough. They're not quite as good as the rest of the teams, but I think they're absolutely good enough to give their team a chance to win and to put the fate into the offense. Now, whether or not you think the offense is going to show up on a nightly basis, because God forbid the offense shuts down for one or two nights and all of a sudden you've lost yourself a series. But if they lose a series, you can point some fingers to the pitching staff, you can point some fingers to the starters, but I think a lot of the fingers would also be pointed to the fact that the offense couldn't get any runs across the plate, and they had every opportunity. I think if the Blue Jays get into the playoffs and they lose, well, they'll be in the playoffs. When the Blue Jays are in the playoffs, if they wind up losing a series, I think you'll be surprised, because a lot of the critiques will be the offense had a chance to score, this best offense in baseball, this best offense the last 5, 6, 7 years of baseball could only scratch across 2 runs, and Dickey held them to 3, Dickey held them to 4. The pitching staff's not great. It's not phenomenal. I think it's good enough, and I don't think it's fair to look at them and say this is why the Blue Jays aren't real contenders.
Richard,
well,
you're
not saying that they're not a real. I do think that yeah, they are a contender, but I just don't think that they can match up against, you know, a really good pitching staff, because I mean the offense, it doesn't show up for a couple of nights because they're just getting shut out. That can really cost you a series, and that's why I would much rather focus and trust my pitchers than I would my hitters.
I think that's really a general rule. That's a general rule of thumb in baseball when you get to the playoffs. I mean, so that
exactly, yeah.
Okay, I got you on that one. I think what Nick's making the argument is, you want to undermine or undervalue, I guess it would be a better word. You're looking to undervalue the Toronto pitching staff, which Nick, I think, is saying, hey, let's not discount these guys just yet. They might have a playoff contending pitching crew right there. That's I think what he's saying. I don't think anybody's taking away from the fact that we know when you get to the playoffs, you better have yourself a solid three-man rotation, mm-hmm. and a fourth ready to go. And that fourth one, okay, all right. So if that one's a little bit weaker, that's fine. But you better, because otherwise you're not getting too far. That's the bottom line on it. We know this from history. Richard, let me pull you back in here for a moment, because you're hearing a lot of love here from some of our panelists here, well, at least Nick and myself, toward the Toronto Blue Jays. What's the word on the ground up there in New York with regard to the Yankees? I mean, are they looking at it going, okay, listen, we're probably going to be the wild card? Or are they still thinking, oh, no, we are winning the division? What's the word up there?
I think they really want the division. I think that's their goal. I think they're totally focused on winning this division. I think this upcoming series starting Thursday is huge. I mean, going to be huge. They had 31,000 against Baltimore on Labor Day, and believe me, those games against Toronto, they'll have like 46,000 every night.
Yeah, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if you are absolutely right. That is just going to be, you know, and you got to hope the weather's good for every single game so that nothing's getting postponed, or that they're having to double up anywhere. Right. Because I think these, I think, I'm telling you, those four games up in New York, I think could absolutely, this might be, we're going to be looking at September 10, 11, 12, 13. Those are going to be, they could be the four most important dates on the AL East calendar right now. And for the remainder of the season.
It
because
could be.
If the Yankees sweep that, this whole thing is completely changed. Toronto's now a one-game play-in in a wild card potentially. That's the way it could change. This is wild. I think this Yankees to Toronto thing is just great. I love it.
Yeah, very exciting. And the guy who's filling in for Texera, Bird, this rookie, has been playing great. He hit a three-run homer yesterday. He was good. That guy can hit. And A-Rod is just kind of like just amazing. Guy hits home runs all over the place.
Yeah, much to my chagrin. let me touch on another New York issue here real quick, Richard, then I'm going to let you go because we want to get into this one. You got another little controversy. You got another little controversy going on there up there in Gotham City with the other team. You got a pitcher by the name of Matt Harvey, and apparently there's been a little controversy over, is he on an inning count? Really? Seriously? Is this what we're doing to this guy? What's the word on that one from up there in the great city of New York?
Well, evidently, I think he is on a season, innings count. I think he's pitching tonight. But I don't believe, I think he's got maybe two or three starts left for the year, or maybe one or two. I think his limit is 185 innings, and he's close to that. And then they'll rest him to the playoffs, and he'll pitch in the playoffs.
Now, there's been a bit of a controversy, however, as to whether there's a firm number on that. I mean, is that where I'm reading this controversy? The controversy is there or isn't there? That's been the question, right? Nobody's really quite sure. Nobody's fessing up to it, in other words. Has anybody fessed up to it? Do I have this wrong? I don't think anybody has, right?
As far as I know, this was kind of like strutted off the cuff with his agent, Scott Boras, on a radio interview show in New York, which set the tabloids on fire. And then I think Matt Harvey went on Derek Jeter's website to say, okay, I may have a season innings limit, but I'll be ready for the playoffs. I'll be pitching. So I'm not exactly sure what his words were, but there is something to that effect. So no one is like, some people are maybe disputing the limit of innings he will pitch in the regular season, but no one is saying he's not going to pitch in the playoffs.
Okay. Now, I've got a lot of Mets fans in social media. In fact, I probably have more Mets fans in social media than anybody from Philadelphia should probably have. Let me put it to you that way. But I happen to have a lot of connections up in New York. And I will say this about Mets fans that I do know. If I can characterize them, and I'm sure that if there are Mets fans out there listening right now, they might be lighting up the phones here in a moment. 347-826-9964. Here's what I know about Mets fans versus Yankees fans. And if I can characterize the two of them completely, they are really uniquely different. Mets fans, the sky is always falling. Yankees fans, hey, everything's great. Don't you worry, we're going to be there. Don't you worry, that's a Yankees fan. With the Mets fans, everything is, look at this team, they really suck. You know, if they lose two in a row, that all of a sudden everybody's jumping off the bandwagon.
They're jumping off the Titanic.
I'm telling you. Do I have, Richard, I don't live in New York. Do I have it just about right?
Yes.
I rest my case. There it is. There it is, Yankees and Mets fans. I just called you both out. Yeah, you know, listen, if I could, if I had to live in New York and had to be friends with a Yankees or a Mets fan, I think I'd have to be friends with a Yankees fan. That I'm serious, because I can't stand it. What are the Mets fans? What's the Mets fans' reaction right now to this whole thing about Matt Harvey? Are they nonplussed about it? Are they just sitting back going, oh, well, if he's on a pitch, if he's on an inning count, he's on an inning count? Or are they screaming about it?
I think they were screaming, and now they've calmed down. I think they were screaming. What the heck is happening here? What's happening to our Matt Harvey? Is he going to pitch or not? What the hell is going on? I don't get it. The guy was good. The guy was lights out, and now you're benching him?
See,
yeah, that was basically the sentiment. And now I think they're calmer because they see that, you know, their hitting's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy Cespedes is playing great.
Yep.
You know, Yanis Cespedes is fabulous. I think Sandy Alderson, that was a gem of a move to get Cespedes.
Cespedes certainly seems to be, at this point right now, certainly seems to be, I don't want to say the missing piece of the puzzle, but for gosh sake, you can certainly go back to his acquisition and their mercurial rise to the top almost simultaneously.
Totally.
So, yep, absolutely.
As of July 31st.
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
He's got power. He's a very exciting hitter to watch.
Exactly. All right, Richard, we appreciate you jumping in with us here again this evening. Keep listening, man.
Take care.
All right. You got it.
Bye.
All right. Now, I do want to get into this, guys, because this has been a bit of a controversy. It was funny. I'm having Richard there to confirm exactly what I'm talking about. That is, I don't know how many of you have friends of yours who are from other, you know, regions, maybe sports friends, whatever, on social media, on Facebook or on Twitter or whatever. I'm telling you, I nailed it. I nailed the mentality of the Mets fan versus the Yankees fan, and it was just confirmed by a guy who's living in New York. But let's get to this whole thing for a moment, because, you know, as I opened the show today and I said we're going to get into a little controversy about what's happening with Matt Harvey, I said this has got a little bit of a kind of a Steven Strasburg kind of feel to it, doesn't it? Who wants to jump in on this one first? What do you guys think about this whole innings thing?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Caleb.
It's very interesting. And as of right now, Harvey's given up 3 runs, and the Nationals are actually winning 3-1 right now. So, speaking of, but it's an interesting scenario, because you're in the middle of a playoff race, but at the same exact time here, you're trying to protect your most valuable piece to your entire franchise. So you're trying to balance between competing for that championship and, you know, saying, hey, this is our year. We have to go all in because this is our shot and this may never happen ever again.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what the Nationals did. You know, they were like, oh, we're going to be fine for the next couple of seasons. We're just going to rest Strasburg, it'll all be good, we'll be back in a, you know, the next season, then the season after. Well, look, they're not back, and they're not going to be back, because they've just fallen apart. So you don't want that to happen for the Mets, and as a Mets fan, as the Mets organization, you have to just really, really choose, all right, are we going to throw caution to the wind, in a sense, to try to win a championship? So, you know, I do think that Harvey, yeah, he's at, you know, what, like 162 innings or whatever. Yeah, I do think that they need to try to abide by that, to try to rest him as much as they possibly can heading into the postseason to keep him rested and ready. But you've got to try to go for it. You have to, because you've seen too many teams sit back and rest somebody, and then, just like the Nationals here, they're not in contention. So you don't want that to happen, but you have to try to be safe and try to actually protect him. But I say that you've got to try to go for it.
Stats that I currently have from Roto World going into this evening, he was at 161 and a third. Or, I'm sorry, 166 and a third. And, of course, as we just heard, now we were going back and forth over it there with Richard. I don't know. I've heard varying numbers. 180, 185 was, I think, the number that I saw reported in numerous places, which would mean he'd have himself another 20 innings to pitch, which would be what? That's three starts. So isn't that taking us close to the end of the season anyhow? Nick, what's your thought on this?
Okay. I'm trying to stay calm through this whole thing, because since the story broke, I've been screaming about it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sitting here in a library doing the show, and I can feel myself getting. Why? Why is this? The whole thing just boggles my mind. From the start, it's an absolute mess. It's a complete mess, because whether it's true or not, the fans are led to believe that Scott Boras has a say in whether or not the Mets want to pitch Matt Harvey, not only at the end of the season, but into the playoffs. And again, whether or not that's true, that's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous to let the agent sit there and tell you, say, hey, no, he's not allowed to pitch in the playoffs. He got you there. He's a good reason why the Mets built the way they built and got where they got. But once you get to the playoffs, no, he's not pitching. Absolutely ridiculous. I understand why Boras would want it, because he's selfish and evil in baseball. He's baseball's devil.
Okay.
But we get past that.
Wait a minute. Okay, I'm trying to understand. Are you saying then that you think it's all poppycock? That there is nothing to this at all? That Boras is saying this simply because he's trying to puff his chest out and make it seem like he's in charge of something?
No. What I'm saying is, since the very start of this story, since the very start of is he pitching, what's he pitching to, will he pitch in the playoffs, it's been wishy-washy, it's been back and forth. Now Matt Harvey first comes out and says, it's just a paraphrase, he doesn't know about the playoffs. Then he comes out and he says in the Tribune, it's never been a doubt that he's going to pitch in the playoffs. Just from the very beginning, it's been up and down, back and forth, left and right. It's been all over the place. Now we're led to believe that he's on this pitching limit in the regular season, but he'll be there in the playoffs. And thank God that's the decision he made, because if Matt Harvey were to pitch in the regular season, they get to the playoffs and he says, no, I'm shutting down, an absolute joke from all ends.
I agree.
In terms of a regular season limit, I understand it. I get it. He's coming off of surgery. You've got the pitching behind it, and I think that kind of softens the blow, because now you take Harvey out of the rotation, and who you throw in instead? You know, DeGrom, Syndergaard, Mats, whoever you want to throw, really. It's not like they're taking an enormous hit, replacing their ace with a minor league call-up, exactly. But if this comes down to the final week of the season...
I was going to say, thank you, unless it comes down to all of a sudden Washington's on a resurge, and now we've got ourselves a fight going into the last, three, four games of the season. Now you got yourself a different situation, right?
Absolutely. It comes down to the last week of the season, and they're within a game and a half. You absolutely have to throw Matt Harvey. You have to, because as good as Steven Matz is, as good as Noah Syndergaard is, as good as Jacob DeGrom is, Matt Harvey's your ace, and I think Matt Harvey's the best pitcher on the team. Of that group, I believe, and I think I'm in the majority, but not the complete absolute, I think Matt Harvey's the best pitcher on the team. He has to throw in a three-game series where you got to win at least two of the three, if not all three, at the end of the season. Matt Harvey has to be pitching in that series. There's no way around it. There's no excuse. You look at Noah Syndergaard's numbers on the road compared to home, especially. He's been inconsistent. You don't know what you're getting out of him. In a must-win game, regardless of where he stands, Matt Harvey has to be on the mound at the end of the season. He absolutely has to, because, again, you've got this mentality for the Mets. There's no guarantee. This is not a team like the Blue Jays or the Astros or one of these teams that says, yeah, we're really good, but we're going to be really good for the next 6-7 years, or so that's the plan. The Mets would like to believe that. There's no guarantee they're even back in the playoffs next year. If the Nationals improve, maybe not next year, but 2 years down the road, 3 years down the road. This is not an extended period of time where the Mets are going to be one of the best teams in baseball. This is their chance. This year, this is their chance. This is a team that's in it to win it right now. Their mentality should be do what it takes to win this year. Don't take this year off. Don't, oh, we got into the playoffs, but we're going to see how it goes, and if it doesn't go well, we'll try again next year. No, you get into the playoffs, you're going all out. He better pitch in the playoffs. He better pitch in the last week of the season if it matters. If you want to rest him now. Rest him now and use him at the end of the season when the games matter most.
I'm not sure. I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth here. I think we can probably all agree to this. Look, here's the bottom line. What the Washington Nationals did, what was it now, 2-3 seasons ago already, was completely mismanaged. That was just ridiculous, stupid, foolish, and everybody knew it. I don't have a problem with an innings count on a pitcher. But I think what you got to do is you've got to adjust it based upon the team's circumstances. If you're in third place and you've got a pitcher, all right, you bubble wrap them. That's it. It's done. We're putting you on the shelf, boy. We're going to put up a couple of other guys, and we're going to check them out from minor league. Because guess what? We're not making it this year. But if you're in a division race, or you're leading the division, well, then all bets are off, right? I mean, that's what it's got to be, right? I mean, that's just the management of it. That doesn't take – you don't have to have the intelligence of more than, what, about a sixth grader to figure that one out, right?
Agreed. I think you say if you're going to limit it to innings, I understand that. Distribute the innings so he gets to pitch every fifth day. And it stinks because the Mets' bullpen has been lackluster, but he has to pitch every fifth day. And if that means he's only throwing 5-6 innings, then he's only throwing 5-6 innings. But you have to throw your ace on the mound when you've got this division in your hands. There's a month left. There's no guarantee you're in. There's no guarantee you're out. It's battled down to the grit for this last month in a division that you weren't even supposed to be a part of. Now you've got it. Don't lose it. Absolutely don't lose it. And like you said, Mike, and I think this is what everybody's kind of pointing back to, If anybody should know, it should be the counterpart. The Nationals did it. It killed them. If anybody in the league should know, it's the Mets. It's the team the Nationals are fighting with. It's the Mets. They have to pitch him every fifth day because, quite frankly, if they don't, you kind of want to tip a little bit to the Nationals. The Nationals have been looking really good lately. They might be back in it even if Harvey is pitching every fifth day. I mean, they're making this tight as well. It's not just the AL East. The NL East is a very, very tight race, or at least it will be in the coming weeks. If you're going to limit him to innings, throw him 5 innings every fifth day. Do not throw him 8, 7, 9 in the next 3 and sit him for 2 weeks. You just if you're the Mets, you can't afford it. You just can't afford it. It's simple.
Yeah, a great point. I mean, listen, they're 5 games up. But we've got 25 games left. So this is not automatic at this point. And when you take a look at it, while the Mets might be feeling comfortable and they're sitting around smelling themselves, you know, as they're leading the NL East, the bottom line is there's still, what, 1, 2, 3, 4 – they're the 5th best team in the National League. So while they might lead the division, they're still only the 5th best team in that league. This is tenuous at best. If we were if the date today was September 25th, okay? Well then we're having a different conversation. But it's September 8th. We still have games to play. So this is not over yet. Caleb, final thought on this whole thing?
I mean, really, Nick's hit it exactly what I would say. I mean, I really don't know what more I could really add. I mean, he's hit it exactly what I think. So, Nick hit it on the head.
Okay. Well, there you go. Mets fans, calm down. You know, all my Mets friends out there, like I said, if you want to call me up, call me out. Hey, I'd be more than happy to take your phone call, 347-826-9964. In fact, I'll take a phone call from any Major League Baseball fan from any market, 347-826-9964. 6-4. By the way, let me throw out, excuse me, our Twitter poll for this evening actually dealt with the question about, excuse me, about inning counts. Frat House Sports Major League Baseball poll, should 8 starting pitchers ever be on a season-long inning count? Call in to 347-826-9964. That's our Twitter poll. Get over to at Frat House Mike. You can do that. You can jump in the chat room. You can leave us a comment there. Or hit us up over off the Skype button. It'll put you through to us loud and clear. Guys, I don't know if you've noticed. We've had a rash of no-hitters all of a sudden. Wanted to get to this last week. Didn't get a chance to. And in fact, some are saying, well, we still have plenty of time that there's a possibility we could set a tie a record or set a record, because I think the record is 8, and we've had 6 so far this year. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, yes. And I believe the record in any one given year was 8. And we could still have we still have time to get a couple more in there. We had 3 in the month of August alone. Jake Arrieta was probably the most well, how can I put this? Unexpected. Jake Arrieta was a guy that a lot of people thought really belonged in the minor leagues. And this guy came up here on the 30th against the Los Angeles Dodgers and threw a no hitter, 2-0. They Chicago Cubbies won it. There's been some chit chat about, I don't know. I can't seem to get a pattern out of it. There does seem to be a lot of no hitters more recently. That is in more in recent years. How many did we have last year? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, last year might have been the record. I guess last year was the record. We had 8. Now, a number of those, I think, were combined. I think a number of those that we had there in the 8 on that
I know
list
that were, one of them was, but I think the rest were all just by one pitcher. But I know that there was one. It was like Houston or Kansas City or somebody that.
I'm wrong about the 8.
Was that last year?
I'm wrong about the eight. Let me do this again. Let me count this.
I think the combined no-hitter was last year, because I feel like
there was a combined no-hitter. That was the Phils, actually.
Yeah, the Phillies did it.
Yeah,
it was Giles. It was Giles, Diekman, Papelbon, Hamels, and Zimmerman. Okay, so I'm sorry. Hamels. It was Hamels. Jordan Zimmerman was on the 28th. That was Washington. So how many did we have? 1, 2, 3... 4, 5. All right, so we only had 5 last year. All right, so we have had one more this year than we did last year. Because if you count the one on September 1, that was a combined no-hitter. But there has been a lot of chit-chat about the fact that no-hitters seem to be a little more... This has gotten kind of passé. It's not as big a deal anymore, right? I don't know. Thoughts on no-hitters? Wanted to touch on it only because of the Jake Arrieta one. And who saw the Jake Arrieta one? How about that one?
I did. That was crazy. I watched
the
whole thing.
It was good. It was a good one.
Yeah, it was really good.
I jumped in on it, I think, around mid-game. And that was a nail-biter. That really was a nail-biter. But anyhow, thoughts on no-hitters and where this is. I mean, it's lost its luster, right?
I'll jump in here. It's incredibly impressive every time it happens. I think we had this discussion not long ago. I think Nick Swartz and I were talking about it. He was saying it's unbelievable. It's one of the greatest achievements in baseball. And while that's true, when you see it as often as you have in the last 2, 3, 4 years, it's kind of like, it's. I'm not trying to take anything away from no hitter, but The Arrieta one happened, and it was incredible. It was amazing, and I was very happy for him and the Cubs, and so be it. But you kind of sit back, and you're like, oh, yeah, there's another no-hitter thrown tonight. And I get it. Even if it's 80 year, 80 year is one every, you know, how many games? I mean, it's one every. It's not often. It's not often, even if it's 80 year. But even if it's 3-4 a year, but it's happening every year, you kind of sit back in your chair and you're like, wow, that was pretty cool. When's the next one? It is kind of, Mike, I think you kind of hit it. It is kind of, I don't want to say getting old or any less impressive, but it's to the point. And again, I don't know if this has been the case either before or has always been the case or any other era of baseball, but at least in the last couple of years, it seems to me that it's kind of maybe a little overblown, just a little bit, because it happens so often. I don't really know how else to put it. I'm not really putting it in the best of the words, but it's kind of like when it happens, you're like, oh yeah, wow, that's cool. It happened again. And that again that you throw in at the end kind of unfortunately takes away from the specialty.
When I was your guy's age, it was so infrequent. In fact, hold on, I have the Major League Baseball records up here. Let me go back to the 70s. When I would have been your guy's age, or the early 80s. Let's see. 79, there was one. 74, there was two. Or 78, there was two. 77, there was three. So 78, two. 79, one. One in 80. Three in 81. Three in 83. All right, so by 83, I've graduated from college. All right, so there you are. I'm covering the era of the age that you guys are right now. Now, what do we have recently? Well, like I just said, we've got five last year. One was combined. We've got six so far this year. 2013, how many do we have? One, two, three. Three in 2013, that's about normal. 2012 was insane. 2012 was nuts. Hold on. Let me see if I can get these. 2012, we had. First of all, you had three perfect games in 2012. One, two, three. You had a combined. That's four, five, six, seven. You had seven, three of which were perfect games. You guys have seen a heck of a lot more no hit pitching than I did at your age. And, yeah, I think that in some respects it kind of makes it somewhat more passe. It's funny. Nick Swartz is a, you know, it's great because Nick brings a perspective that is kind of in between all of us. You know, I'm kind of the guy on the high end of the spectrum age-wise, and then you guys are on the low end of the spectrum, and then Nick's coming right there in the middle. And so maybe Nick's perspective is perhaps maybe more appropriate. I don't know. Caleb, how do you look at a no-hitter? Is that a big deal anymore? Or is it, it's just another no-hitter?
I do think that it is a huge, huge deal because, I mean, it's a big accomplishment what you've done. But I think it has lessened in the value because we see so many of them. Now, you know, whenever you think, oh, four, five, whatever, over a season, I mean, that's 162 games. But to have a perfect game, a no-hitter, you know, something like that many times in a season is a bit crazy. So I enjoy seeing them, and I love to watch them, and I love to see them happen because it's such a big accomplishment. You know, that's one of those things that really can get you in as a Hall of Famer is that, hey, I had this amount of no-hitters, perfect games, you know, things like that. Like, that's kind of an extra padding, you know, to help you out. So I think it's a huge, huge deal, but it definitely has lost its luster in a sense. You know, it's not a... you know, what glamorous thing, because you're like, oh, somebody else, yeah, they threw a no-hitter, fantastic, wonderful. But for me, I mean, I love to see them, and I'm like, whoa, somebody just had a no-hitter, like, that's really awesome. But, you know, a lot of people just don't find that fun because people want to see offense now. They want to see big offensive showdowns and, you know, shootouts and all this, you know, 11 to 9 type of a games and, you know, things like
I
that.
Don't.
You
I
know,
don't.
Yeah, I don't like those, but that's what a lot of people like, and I just don't enjoy that at all, you know? But I still put some value on the no-hitters just because it's a big accomplishment for somebody to have that. So
I think a perfect game is still an automatic for the Hall of Fame, if I'm not mistaken. I think that automatically gets you into the Hall of Fame, right? A perfect game, not a no-hitter.
I'm not sure. Honestly, I really don't know. I mean, I would think that you would have to at least, you know, really produce, you know, 150 to 200 wins and a perfect game to be considered for the, you know, for the Hall. But I mean, that's what I would think. I wouldn't just
I think a perfect game is like an automatic, you're in. Oh, I think I got to check that because I think if you throw a perfect game, I think that's been one of the kind of unwritten sort of rules. A perfect game is an automatic. You throw a perfect game, you're automatic into the Hall of Fame, I believe.
Philip Humber, Dallas Braden.
I'd have to check the list, Nick. I know I'm looking at the perfect game list myself. I'd have to look at the list of Hall of Famers. Humber might be in there, actually. Humber might be. That might be correct. I was thinking I had heard that was one of the rules, but I don't quote me on that. I will get verification in the off week and come back. In fact, I'm making margin notes on it right now so that I can check that for next week. Interesting, though. All right, so I think we're kind of all in agreement a little bit. Perhaps maybe the no-hitter, with the more often that it's occurring, kind of maybe losing its luster just a bit. You know, the thing that made that so kind of intriguing was the fact it was a rarity, but not as rare as it used to be. One of the things we talked about early on in the season apparently has come to fruition as we're starting to wind things down. 25 games, as I pointed out, remaining, as Nick likes to say, 25-ish remaining. One of the things we talked about early on on this program, hey, was pace of play going to work? Well, apparently it has because we have seen we saw it early and we talked about it early. The average time of games has, in fact, dropped. And I think that that's a good thing. I said it months ago, back when we first started analyzing it. And apparently now, of course, we have a lot more data to throw into that analysis. And an article that came out over on Hardball Talk a couple of weeks ago, in fact, the average length of game has dropped by about 8 minutes. This is a good thing. Good thing. Absolutely, guys. I think, with all due respect, I think if in fact we can point to pace of play as being the thing that has accelerated it, I would say it's been seamless. In other words, you haven't noticed it. Real quick, anybody's thoughts on the shortening of the game and what your thoughts were on that one? Seamless, yes? Are we in agreement?
Yeah,
I would say so, yeah.
Nobody's noticed that things have gotten, you know, that the game's moved along any quicker. I mean, you've noticed, here's when you notice. You know when you notice? You notice when the game is over and you're looking over at the clock and going, oh, wow, that game was less than 3 hours. How about that?
Yeah, when it's
that's when you notice.
Yet.
You're not noticing during the play of the game. And I think that's what's great about it. I think they've done a very, very good job there. That I do say. So just wanted to bring that one up because that one's been sitting on the agenda here for a couple of weeks. This one's a little bit delicate. We got a couple of minutes here, and I want to get everybody's thoughts on it. I don't know. Listen, I could have the phone lines here lighting up depending on who's listening and how fervent they are on this. Curt Schilling was dumped from the ESPN lineup for the, I guess now the remainder of the season. Was that the latest word? He's out for the rest of the season, right? Do I have that one?
Yes.
Is that correct? Okay. All right.
That's what I've heard, yeah.
Okay.
I'm not exactly sure why, but that's what I've heard.
Okay. Initially, it was that he wasn't going to be allowed to participate in the Little League World Series broadcast. That's what it initially was, that ESPN had suspended him for that. But then, of course, once the Little League World Series was finished, well, then they still had to continue to figure out and decide what they were going to do. I don't know. ESPN kind of strikes me as being a bit NFL-ish, I guess, in the way that they dispense discipline. Curt Schilling sent out a tweet on, do I have the date here? I believe it was August 25th. Sent out a tweet of a picture of Adolf Hitler. And Adolf Hitler, giving the high sign, you know, the Sieg Heil salute. And the message in the top left was, it said, only 5 to 10% of Muslims are extremists. And underneath of it, it read, in 1940, only 7% of Germans were Nazis. How did that go? Curt Schilling's comment over the meme, I guess that's what it would technically be. It was a meme graphic. Curt Schilling's comment was, the math is staggering when you get to true numbers. That was the tweet that he put out that created this furor. Oh, I'm sorry, did I use the word furor? That sounded wrong. that was dumb of me. I didn't mean to do that. Seriously. But that's the tweet that got him into trouble. On the day that it happened, I'm going to be honest with you, I didn't get it. And to this minute, I still don't get it. I don't get what has been put off the broadcast for. I don't see where this is in any. Is there something wrong with me that I'm not finding something in this to be politically incorrect or politically correct? Is there something wrong with me? I'm not sure. Look, Curt Schilling has been criticized. Anybody that has heard Curt Schilling or knows anything about Curt Schilling or knows anything about his political slant, bottom line is this: Curt Schilling is a super ultra conservative. Okay, that's just where he is. He is a Republican all the way down the line. And listen, he goes a little nuts sometimes with Twitter. He gets into a few Twitter wars with people and fans and people who listen to his programs. He's been known to do that. But everybody knows, anybody who knows anything about Curt Schilling, you just know his political leaning. So I don't see why ESPN suddenly felt the need that they had to walk away from this one. I don't know. Nick, did you happen to see the message that was put out?
I saw when the story broke, I heard about the story a little bit. I didn't look too much into it because, quite frankly, I try not to mix sports with that kind of stuff too much because it gets very delicate, as you said. The only thing I'll say is, regardless of whether he was politically wrong or politically correct or whatever it might have been, the society we live in today, if there's enough of a population that felt offended by what he said, whether it's justifiable or not, ESPN and all these like major sports networks, CBS, Fox Sports, all these major sports networks have, I think, been very cautious in either keeping things low-key or taking immediate action of late. And it doesn't surprise me that they suspended him for the rest of the year. Let's keep in mind the rest of the year is a month and a half, 2 months. I mean, it's not like they're getting rid of him forever. I think it was kind of more just, all right, we understand that there's some population out there that might be offended. We're going to take action. And it's kind of like a cop-out almost for the network saying, look, like, we're going to do without you for the rest of the year. You can't be talking about that stuff. You represent our country or our corporation. You represent our company. And we've got to do something. So we're just going to let you go for the rest of the year. And we'll talk about it at the end of the year. But, you know, again, whether it's politically incorrect or correct, or whether it's justifiable to feel offended, it doesn't affect me. So I don't think I'm right in pretending to know whether it's offensive or not. But I also would tell you that even the slightest things at this point today, with everything going on in the world and the way society's turning, you've got to be really, really, really careful and really cautious. And I think Mike, again, whether he was right or wrong, I think the network did the right thing in saying, look, we're just gonna put an end to it now. We're just gonna cop out, and we're just gonna you know, let you go for a month and a half, and we'll bring you back later.
Well, I guess I kind of hope that's going to be the way it's going to go, and maybe they're just not going to string him along. I mean, otherwise just release the guy. I guess that's
right.
The case. But, you know, I don't know. I just ESPN sometimes drives me nuts with the way that they I don't understand why they feel that they Yeah, I understand advertisers and all that sort of thing. I got it. You know, hey, but, you know, when you're a news reporting agency, as you're supposed to be, and you are so beholden to your advertisers that you're going to knee jerk on every darn thing, well, how can I trust anything that's coming off of your network? I guess that's basically where I'm coming from on it. I don't know. Caleb, any thought, and we'll move off of it. Just wanted to bring it up because, again,
I mean,
it's been
yeah,
a little bit.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, you have to walk a fine line, you know, on social media just because, you know, everyone sees it and everyone's got they have an opinion, you know, on everything. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of, you know, organizations, companies, that they take a lot of action for just silly little things, you know, and I don't know, you know, I'm not I don't know everything about it that's happened, so, you know, I can't really say a whole lot about it, but I do think that it is kind of pushing it to suspend him, you know, just, I mean, I don't know. That's just what I think, but, you know.
I got you. All right, before we get over to our Series Streak Challenge for this week, and boy, things have gotten quite interesting over there. I did want to bring this one up real quick. I thought this was actually pretty amusing, and you got to give it to the guy if, in fact, it's completely true. Reported the other day over on Hardball Talk, for those that have been following, we know that Wrigley Field has been undergoing some renovations now for, I guess, the better part of about a year and a half. Report came out that one of the construction guys that's been helping with or doing work on the renovation, yeah, he's a White Sox fan. And he fessed up. Yeah, I'll tell you what I did, he says. I took a White Sox hat and I buried it in the middle of the outfield. You got to give it to the guy. Come on, that is awesome. That is awesome. You know, I can only hope it's true. I really do. And that's not to say that I have any ill will towards the Cubs. I just think if that isn't a stupid college trick, huh? Really? Isn't that a college trick that you'd see in college football? Great stuff. I appreciate that. That one was a good one. All right, let's get over to our series streak challenge here. Oh, here we go. Let me get this up here. Yes, and as many of you know, for weeks and weeks and weeks now, 22, I believe. No, yes, 22. 22 weeks now. Yes, 22. We have been picking series that we believe, each one of us, that we believe would be a winner for the week. We particularly try to pick a what we think might be an underdog sort of matchup. But, you know, hey, we're not real firm on that one. I mean, if it's an underdog, it's an underdog. You know, if it's close to being an underdog, we'll accept it. Anyhow, where do things stand right now? Well, it goes to show you, folks, if you think this thing is easy, if you think it's easy to pick who's going to win from one week to the next a particular series, you ought to think again. Right now, I'm leading. I'm 12-10. Yeah, I'm 2 games over .500. Are you kidding me? Nick and Sean are 11-11. That's .500. Caleb, 10-12. That's 2 games under .500. I lost last week. Everybody else won. So we'll see where things go this week. I've got Sean's pick for the week right here. Sean is going with the Boston Red Sox over the Tampa Bay Rays. That's gutsy. That's a gutsy move. Caleb, what do you think?
Well, yeah, Sean's pick, that's interesting. But there's a lot of really good matchups here, so I'm kind of on the fence. But I'm going to go with Minnesota over the White Sox. Speaking of the White Sox fan, and I really do hope that he really buried that hat, because that's just funny. Like, that's just, oh, that's great.
All right, now let me get that down again. You're going with, I'm sorry?
Minnesota.
Twins. Over.
Yep, over the Chicago White Sox.
Over White Sox. Gotcha. Nick, where are we going?
I was going to go Boston over Tampa Bay, but Sean took that, and I stole his pick last week. So I'll go, this isn't exactly an upset, but they're about the same. You said you'll be lenient. How about the Blue Jays over New York?
I was looking at that one as well. That's a 4-gamer now.
All right. I'll go with it. I'll roll with it.
Okay. Blue Jays.
Caution to the wind.
Blue Jays. Okay, so you're going Blue Jays over Yanks.
Yes.
Wow. I would have gone the other way on that one. I would have gone Yanks over Blue Jays because that's a home series and it's a 4-game. Caleb, I like your pick, but I'm going in reverse. I'm going White Sox over Twins. How do you like that one? Aha!
Interesting. Well, we'll see who's the winner here.
Everybody's a little bit different there. Real quick, before we get out of here and get off the air, Nick, I want to turn it over to you. First of all, you got a big program coming up, I think, on Thursday, early Thursday evening, right before the Frat House Sports Show, I think, don't you?
Yeah, it's at 6 o'clock this Thursday.
Yes, and you'll be going from 6 to what, 7?
6 to 7, it's our NFL preview show. It's the premiere of Season 3 of my podcast here at St. Joe's, Hawk Talk. So it should be exciting.
Awesome. What a way to warm up. And there is a link for that that we can put up on. Is there a link for the program itself?
Yeah, absolutely. We can put up over?
Okay, yeah, send that over in our thread, and I will get that up over on our Frat House Sports page. Because, listen, that will lead right into our fourth anniversary program. Our fourth anniversary Frat House Sports Show comes up at 7 p.m. Eastern Time live on Thursday night. So that'll be great. We'll get a little bit of your program and then that. What else on your mind real quick there? Nick?
I wanted to throw a couple thoughts out here, and I'm sitting here kind of shaking in my chair as I'm thinking about it. First one, we've seen this happen before, and it's such a sin. The man that fell at Turner Field, I don't think, or at least I haven't had an opportunity really to extend my condolences towards his family. It's so awful to see. It's so sad. I can't even imagine. The second direction I want to throw my thoughts is, and again, I don't know if we touched on this on the show when maybe I wasn't on, but Allison Parker and Adam Ward down in Virginia. Killed on live television as they're doing a report from Bridgewater Plaza as a 19-year-old that's striving to get into media. They were 24 and 27. It was such a sin. I just wanted an opportunity to, from both, you know, my organization, the guys at 30 Minutes of Madness and here at Frat House Sports, kind of extend condolences towards their network, towards their families as well. I'll be honest, I had never heard of them before the incident, but since they immediately become heroes to a lot of young guys, a lot of young girls trying to make it into the media. It's very, very sad, and I just wanted an opportunity to throw out a few prayers and a few thoughts.
Nicely done, Nick. Thank you. Appreciate that. Appreciate all of you that have been listening in here this evening. As usual, make sure you're back here with us on Thursday night, as I just pointed out. Get over to our Frat House Sports page. Look for Frat House Sports. Leave spaces in between. Leave a little purple icon. You'll get the link for Nick's program. They'll be coming up on Thursday. In the meantime, listen, 25 games left. Get out there and enjoy your baseball.